Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Say.
Welcome to this latest episode of the Kosafa Show as we chat to one of South Africa's rising stars who has deep connections to the home of Cristiano Ronaldo and is hoping to break through into the Bafana Bafana squad in the coming years.
We also find out the latest on the match officials front in the Kasafa region from renowned referees manager Felix Tungwarima, and chat to another local legend in Fran Hilton-Smith about a recent initiative between La Liga and Kasafa. First up, we speak to South African-born playmaker Ricardo Schutte, who was in the acclaimed FC Porto Academy, and this season was on loan at La Liga 2 side Mirandes. A foot injury looks to have scuppered his chances of making South Africa's Olympic Games squad, but he explains his difficult journey to date and why he is hopeful of one day representing Bafana Bafana. So if we just talk about when you started playing football then in Madeira, how did your passion for the game come about and where did it all start for you?
It was like my grandfather, when he was alive, he used to watch the game of our like town, you know, the Ribeira Brava. They played there and he always wanted for me to go with him and watch the game. And we used to watch the game, and I don't know, my mother one day just had the idea that I could play, and I went there, and I was so young that there was nothing like a championship for me. So I started training alone with my mother and stuff. And then one coach was watching me and told me that I was good, and it started from there.
Sounds like your mom has been quite influential in your career so far. Well, the early part
my grandmother a little bit more.
Okay.
But my mom, we used to take me to practice and stuff.
And did you have any sort of role models when you were growing up, players that you aspired to be like, even if it was a local coach or someone like that, or obviously a global star?
Obviously, coming from Madeira, we always watch Cristiano Ronaldo, you know. it's obvious. And I don't know, I like United a lot because of him. I like Real Madrid a lot because of him. And now I like Juventus a lot because of him. Always watching him play, and it was like a role model for me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, South Africa knows Cristiano Ronaldo and a global great of the game. But we often don't appreciate how revered he is, especially in Madeira. You know, I think there is the airport named after him, or there's a statue at the airport and whatnot. Just how big is Cristiano Ronaldo on the island? And
it's very, it's like our, I don't know, like the best thing that happened to Madeira is Cristiano Ronaldo, and to Portugal too. But coming from like a small island, you know, it's just a great impact that he does have in the community and stuff. Everybody talks about him, everybody loves him, and it's like he's like a star for all the young kids that want to be like football players. If you come from Madeira, you just look at Cristiano Ronaldo. Where did he came from? What did he did? How difficult was his life in Madeira, because he was not like a stable guy like with the money, and just seeing me growing and playing, it's just like a role model for everyone who's starting to play.
And I guess it's not just his skill, but it's the way he looks after himself.
Yes, of course.
You know, he's so professional in the way that he operates, and to still
it's unbelievable.
At the age of 36 or whatever he is, to still be playing that way is just remarkable and an inspiration, I guess.
Yeah, of course. And just like, I have like it's not the same history as him, but it's like quite similar, you know, because I moved to Portugal when I was 10, and he moved also when he was young. But then he went to United, I went to Rio Ave, but it's like similar because I can see him, and I went to the stuff that he also went through with the difficulty with the accent from Madeira to Portugal, and I feel his pain, and it's like, yeah, I always watch him, and I will always watch him and try and do the things that he does.
And then, you know, it seems you played locally on Madeira, and then you say you moved to the mainland. You joined Porto's academy, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, for a couple of years, I think. You were maybe, as you said, you were 10 years old there, sort of 10 to 12. Just, you know, obviously Porto's a massive, massive club. You know, what was it like, even at a very young age, being part of the academy there?
At first, it was so quickly that I didn't believe that was happening, because it was like we have a meeting in Madeira, and after the meeting, one guy from Porto came to me and told me that he wants me to play. But when you are a young kid, you don't think of the stuff that my family had to go through for me just to go play for another club, because for me, I just, hey, grandmother, I want to play for Porto. And I didn't know that he needs to change all his life. All the things changed for my family because of me. But in the young age, I want to play football. I want to play football. And I was 10, I think. I moved to Porto, and it's like a completely different thing, mentality, training, conditions, everything. And I felt like I was growing, and I was alone with my grandmother, and it was very, very difficult times, because like, if you are young, and I was like, the things that I told you with the accent from Madeira, I was bullied a lot when I was younger in school and stuff. And I remember that me and my grandmother just start crying almost every night in the beginning, just the two of us alone in somewhere we didn't know no one. And it was difficult, but the football was going very well when I was young. Everybody liked me when I was playing. And then my sister and my mother was having difficult times also in Madeira. And I have the opportunity. They told me if I want to, I can live in an adoption family for a year. And that's what I did. I stayed with a family. My grandmother went back to Madeira with my mother and my sister. And I stayed 1 year with a family that I didn't know.
And did that help to settle you, or was it more destabilizing?
Let's see. It was a great, great family. Truly need to say that, because they treat me very, very, very well. But you are 11 years old. You don't have any friends. You don't have your family. It's difficult. And I was crying also. But the family was awesome. And I think it built character, you know. It made me grow. But after that year, all my family came to Porto for me to play.
Yeah. Then you moved to Rio Aves. How did that come about to go from Porto to there?
I think it's the time that I almost thought I was going to give up, because I was thinking like, all my family came from Madeira for me, but because I was playing in Porto. It was not because I was playing in Rio Ave or other clubs, because I was playing in Porto, and they did all this stuff just for me. And now I'm out of Porto and I'm going to play for a club that is not as big as Porto, you know. And I was thinking like, we should go back to Madeira, and I don't know. But then my grandmother always supported me and was telling that everything's going to be okay. But it was a difficult change, but it was a good change for me, because Porto, it's very difficult, very good players. And in Rio Ave, I had the opportunity to play more, to show more and grow also as a football player.
Yeah, and I think you, I stand corrected, but I think you made your senior team debut in the Europa League. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Did that come as quite a surprise, or did you kind of feel it was coming?
In the Europa League, no. Yeah. I was expecting like the Primeira Liga, Portuguese, but it was like a dream come true for real. I started like the preseason with the first team, and the first games were the qualifications for the Europa League. And we went to Poland, and I was in the squad, but I didn't play. But just being in the squad, I was like, I'm living a dream. You know, I'm here traveling to Poland to play a Europa League game. But I didn't get in. But then in the second leg, we needed to score a lot of goals to pass. And I went, I think, like 10, 15 minutes. But it was really, really, really good.
And just sort of what's happened since then. So you had a full season with the B side, which seemed to go pretty well. I think you got 11 goals or so.
Yes.
What was that season like for your development as a player?
In my first senior year, it was also very, 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 very difficult, because before the first year of the professional team, I got an injury very bad that I broke my foot, and I stayed out for like 7-8 months, I think. And then I didn't know what to do, because not many teams would want me, because I didn't play as much and I didn't do the stuff that I wanted to do. But then Rio Ave came with the B team, because they didn't have to. It was the first year. And they created a B team and told me to join them. And like, it saved me, because I started playing, I started doing good. And that's when I went to, they called me to the first team. So yeah, it was a really, really good first year of senior, because I played a lot of games. And if you play, you show your qualities. And if you show your qualities, people will see. And then it will give you opportunity. If you deserve an opportunity, they will give you. And they gave me. And I'm very thankful.
And now this season, you're on loan in La Liga, or Liga 2, at Mirandes. How did that move come about?
Because I was then, the B team went to, they stopped and created a under-23 championship. I don't know if you know, in Portugal, they have a under-23 championship. And it was a league that had a lot of visibility. A lot of people would look for them to buy players, because it was young and with quality. And Mirandes was watching me since last year. They wanted me to go last year, but things didn't went out with the negotiation, because I had like a very good under-23 championship last year. But the deal didn't go through. And then they still was interested in me this year. That's why they continued talking to me and stuff. And fortunately, the things go as planned, and the negotiation went through, and I'm here, and I'm very, very happy.
We often think of them as very similar, but is the Spanish and the Portuguese game kind of very similar? Is it an easy adjustment for you to make from one to the other?
I was used to play with friends, you know. Mm. It was like we would play together like for 6-7 years or something like that. And now I was brought into a different environment, people that I didn't know, that is not my friends, and I need to adapt to that. The language also, it's similar, but it's different. But the football, it's like a more adult football, I would say. You know, it's like you need to think more quickly. You need to do stuff, the simple stuff you need to do. You don't need to exaggerate in your movements. You need to do simple stuff and good stuff. And it's the difference, because I was playing like under-23 championship, and now things are a little bit faster, a little bit, you need to be a little bit more sharp. And I think that's the difference. It's like the same, but a little bit more, or everything.
And you seem to have got quite a bit of game time so far this season. Are you quite happy? You said you were very happy to be there. Are you happy with how this season has gone so far for you?
Let's see, because I had like a few injuries, but in the beginning I was doing very, very well. I was, I think I adapted very, very quickly to the game, to the team. I was doing well. I was playing like 90 minutes every game. And then I had a little injury, then another one, then another one. But now I think I'm coming back. I already last game I did like 85 minutes. I think I'm coming back, and I'm really enjoying, because I'm learning a lot. And it's the year that I'm learning the most. It's like, if you are playing in the first squad, in the team that starts the game, you are playing like consistently, then you're gonna show, and you're gonna show your quality. Like I said, people will know, and a lot of people watch this championship. A lot of people are interested in this, because it's like it's a very, 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 very quality, and it's a very tough championship.
Yeah, could you just sort of describe your playing style? I mean, obviously, I know you're a forward, but are you more sort of a target man type striker, like a number 9, or more of a number 10?
No, more like a number 10. Okay. I love to be free. You know, I'm not like a striker that's only in the area, all inside the box. I'm not too good inside the box. I'm more of a creative player that passes and do movements. Like I can go in the line, I can go in the middle, I can go fetch the game close to the midfield. I like to be free. I'm not like a striker. I'm more like a 9.5, 10.
And have you set yourself any goals that you'd like to achieve this season? Or as you say, is it just about learning and developing and growing as a player?
Yeah, it's more about that. I have goals. I have 2 goals to play like very minutes. I want to do the most minutes I can do. I want to do it, because in the final, in the season, they're gonna see how much time you play. If you play long time, it's because you have quality, you know. And I want to do the most minutes I can do, but I don't have like personal goals. Like I want to do 15 goals or 10 assists. It just comes naturally, and I'm not pointing to nothing like that, but just growing and learning and stuff.
And have you sort of thought at all about international football? Is South Africa an option for you as an international team?
Yeah, of course, yeah. I'm thinking about that like 2 years ago. I was since then I was think a lot about playing for South Africa, and of course it's an option for me.
Yeah. And I suppose that I know for a fact that the people at the South African Football Association are watching you. That must give you, I guess, confidence and motivation.
Yes.
Know that at least you're being looked at, you know, and at least.
Yeah, of course. And I'm happy that it's happening. And I think I can help the team. If they like me, if they like the style I play, if they think I'm good enough, then yeah, I'll be more happy to help them, and they help me.
And if we just look beyond the season in terms of club football, you know, where do you hope to see yourself going from here?
Yeah, I still have 1 year contract with Rioave. So there's that, but I want to look, finish the season strong. I want to do the best I can and discuss my contract. I don't know with the Rioave team.
And do you obviously there's some other South Africans who are in the Primeira Liga in in Portugal, Luther Singh.
Si. Yeah. Luther Singh, si, si.
Yeah. Yes. Now Foster at Guimarães as well. Mm-hmm. Do you, do you watch them at all? Do you have any thoughts about them?
Yeah, I watch more Luther Singh because I have like a friend who play with him in Braga.
Yes.
And they talk me a lot about him, that he's a very, very good player. And we can see it now. He's doing a very, very good season until now. And I watch him on the tele last game. I think it was against Porto, and he did very, very well.
Joining us now is CASAFA referees manager Felix Tangawarima, who is also a member of the Confederation of African Football's Referees Committee and a FIFA technical instructor. There have been some exciting developments with match officials from our region recently, not least the fact that we have a trio going to the Olympic Games in Tokyo later this year. Tell us all about that, please, Felix.
Mark, you know, the time we are living in is very difficult, but you know, every time we have some exciting news, you know, it is a great pleasure for the zone, for COSAFA as a region, to have a trio going to the Olympics. From the two trios going to the Olympics in the tournament, in the continent, COSAFA is represented by three, which is Gomez from South Africa as a referee. We have Souru from Lesotho and Malengula from Mozambique. What makes this development exciting for COSAFA and the referees department is that these are the products of our under 17. You know, in under 17, we have an opportunity to use the referees who are not in FIFA, on the FIFA list. And we identified these referees when we were going around the COSAFA countries. And we brought them together, brought them to the under 17 tournaments, and they've grown up to where they are now. I mean, through all the stages of COSAFA, up to CAF, you know, third games, CAF, you know, junior tournaments, AFCON, and they look now, they are going to the Olympics. And before they went to the Olympics, they were at the World Cup under 17. So you can see our development program is consistent with what we want the referees to achieve.
We've also seen the emergence of top female referees from the COSAFA region the last couple of years, including some who officiated at the men's tournaments, such as the African Nations Championship and the CAF Under 20 Cup of Nations. That must be exceptionally pleasing for you.
You see, what we have done as COSAFA is that we actually taken the, you know, the progress of female referees as our priority. As a result, you find out we use them in our tournaments. For example, if you look at the tournaments we held last year in December, the under 17 and the under 20, we actually had almost 50-50 men and the female referees. Surprisingly, our female referees did exceptionally well. You could see, actually, we had, for example, in CHAN, we were represented. We had Benedetta from Malawi. She was officiating in CHAN. We had Akona, who did very well during the under 20, you know, in Port Elizabeth. She went further to go to Mauritania for the under 20 proper, where she did very well. What is exciting, Mark, is that the clips when she was refereeing, you know, in Mauritania, we have now incorporated them into our teaching material for the entire continent, telling them that, look, this is what we want you to do. If a lady referee can do this, why can't you do it? So you find out it's really exciting for us as a zone. And 3 weeks ago, she was in Tunisia as a fourth official for the Champions League. So our female referees, we really have all the faith in them. Last year, we had Diana Chikotesha, who actually participated in the Olympic tournament in Egypt. So basically, we have actually made a stride in terms of women development in our department as referees.
The other issue, Felix, where there's a lot of progress these days is the issue of professionalizing the referees. And it was recently announced by CAF it would be 20 match officials that would be going fully professional, including four from our COSAFA region. Can you tell us a little bit more about that as well, please?
Yes, because what's happening is we are trying to professionalize, you know, referees. And CAF has come up with a panel of 20 referees as a pilot project. We are starting with 20. And out of the 20, we have four from our zone, which is a big, you know, development for us. We are supplying equally the bigger number in that group of 20. Victor Gomez, again, from South Africa. I mean, Victor Gomez and Joshua Bondo these referees, we have used them as firefighters. Where there are hot games, you find out they are always there. You can see they are always traveling all over Africa, you know, because of their strength, their personality. They are very strong referees. They are part of the professional team. We also have Ando Fetra from Madagascar and our Jan Sikazwe. All those four are actually on the professional, you know, panel of CAF. In addition to that, we also have our physical coach from South Africa, who is actually looking after these professional referees, Derek Hansen. He is actually the head now of physical coaching in the COSAFA region. He's actually looking at their physical aspect as we look, I mean, we follow them. And I'm also looking at their technical aspect as we actually monitor their progress. So you can see really, as COSAFA, we are always becoming the leader in whatever we are doing. Whatever CAF wants to do, COSAFA is the leader in this development.
There's also a drive to introduce VAR on the continent. Is that something you would support? And you know, given the financial restraints of it, is it implementable, do you think, across the whole of Africa?
You find out, VAR is there to stay. We can't run around, we can't run away from it because it's being implemented. It's now incorporated into the laws of the game, which means it's there to stay. And as COSAFA, we don't want to be left behind. We actually, through the Secretariat, Sue, and all the COSAFA staff, we have actually done, you know, groundwork to actually try and have two of our tournaments, probably starting from the semifinals of the senior women and to the finals and the semifinals of the senior men, as a pilot project to try and see if we can implement it. So if all goes well, these two tournaments this year, the last part of the tournament, we are going to try and introduce VAR into the game. Why are we taking the last part of the tournament? As you know, for referees to officiate as a VAR referee, he has to be certified by FIFA and FIFA and the IFAB. So we have some referees who can do that. So like we have Janice Sikazwe, we have Victor Gomez, we have Martin from Angola, Joshua Bondo. So you find out why we are not starting with the beginning of the tournament is because we don't want to constantly use the same referees for the whole tournament. So if we use our four senior referees who are certified to use VAR at the end of the tournament, you'll find out it will work. But definitely we are working on it. And again, we are told that there is a cheaper version of the VAR, which we are actually working on it as COSAFA. So I can safely say that, yes, as COSAFA, we are encouraging that our countries embark on this technology, which is, for us as referees, we like it because it makes our referee's job easy. We, as long as we can make a good decision, a correct decision, for us, yes, we embrace it.
You've detailed some wonderful progress for COSAFA in the refereeing sphere over the last couple of years. But obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has scuppered a lot of your plans. I mean, how have you been able to keep up with your programs over this period of difficulty for all of us?
You know, since March last year, 2020, the effects of COVID continue to flow throughout the world. And the football ecosystem is still under siege. As referees department, we are under siege from this pandemic. And when you look at it, the pandemic is looking like likely to be with us for some time. However, we have put some new ways to deal with the impact to our referees, which is arising from this disruptive virus. So as the referees department of COSAFA, we have taken advantage of the technology and they put some programs in place in which we are continuing with our online training, both for referees and for instructors, technical instructors and the physical instructors. We have embarked on the development of local instructors. What we have done is, because of the restrictive movement we are facing, where we can't move from country to country, But within the country, they can actually group, you know, as long as they follow the COVID protocol and they come together. So we have embarked on the development of local instructors, which is both the technical and the physical, as it is easy for them to help their referees from within their own countries, as they are able to have some practical, face-to-face practical on-field training. So as part of this program, we held a five-day regional instructors course for 25 new instructors last year, towards the end of last year. 25 new local instructors. Out of the 25, we had five who were women. So again, as we go with this program, we have put in place mid-May that we are going to organize a futsal and a beach soccer course for our referees and our instructors. Again, we are using this technology to go around the disruptive virus.
Mr. Tangawiuma, you mentioned there about futsal and beach soccer. What are your kind of immediate priorities for the next, say, 6 to 12 months if we look ahead now?
You see, when you look at the COSAFA program of competitions, we have these tournaments on the calendar. As we have these tournaments on the calendar, obviously, as the department, we want to be prepared before the tournament comes. So that's why we are saying with the second week of May, we are putting together some instructors. You see, what we want to do is we want to put instructors first and then referees. So we are going to organize a five-day, you know, program, which is combined for futsal and beach soccer together in the 5 days. We will actually separate the, you know, the participants. I mean, since it's online, we are going to have some instructors from FIFA will help us with. There is one guy from FIFA, and I have been in touch with CAF. They are actually also lobbying some two instructors from Europe to come and help us. As you know, this area, it has been lagging behind, you know, in terms of you know, development. Beach soccer referees and the futsal referees, you find out even within the national association themselves, they are not doing the same they do to the 11 aside. So we don't have many instructors specialized in those areas. We have some, yes, we have some in Mauritius, but we need a little bit of more of them so that we can develop our instructors. Remember, when we are having this tournament, we have to have the instructors leading the referees. So we develop the instructors, and then we come up with a system where we can have referees. We are earmarking to have at least two referees from every COSAFA, you know, member association, which means we are looking at about 28 to 30. And within those people, then we can separate to see which ones can we use in beach soccer, which ones can we use in futsal. So we have actually gone for our department right now. This is the on high priority, because we need to put things together. We need to have referees. We need to have instructors. So because this is on the calendar this year, we have to see to it that by May, something will be in place already.
We are joined now by legendary CAF and FIFA coaching instructor Fran Hilton-Smith, who not only has an exciting new book in the work, but also recently took part in a coaching workshop hosted by Spain's La Liga for tacticians from across the region. Fran, thank you for your time. Let's start with that workshop. How was it for you?
Well, thank you very much, Nick, for the chat. The workshop is absolutely brilliant. It's running at present with two kind of topics. One is a masterclass focusing more on tactics, technical player development, and then a club session on how to work with academies, etc. But for me, the most exciting thing, I really pushed for this, but we've got around 47 women on this workshop, some attending the masterclass, some the club session, but every country of the 14 is represented by a woman in some aspect. And that really is groundbreaking for COSAFA and so exciting to be empowering the women in our region. So very great. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, now, and speaking of that, the National Women's League has just kicked off for the new season in South Africa. That must be a welcome development.
Yes, exciting. The girls have been out of action for so long with COVID. So really exciting this weekend to the National League kicking off. And of course, the big guns in the league already stamping their mark. Sundowns 5-0, I think it was, won JVW, the new contenders, but powerhouse with a lot of national team players coming away 5-1. And then two of the top teams drawing, UWC and TUT, playing out to a draw. So I think already the strongest contenders stamping their mark. But of course, early days, and other teams who have been there have had a chance to get a feel of it. So it bodes for an exciting Women's National League this year.
Yeah, and feeding into that, of course, we have the introduction of a Women's Champions League in the CASAFA region this year, where South Africa will be represented by Sundowns. But of course, we've got seven clubs from the rest of the region. Again, a very exciting development.
Groundbreaking, this CASAFA League, groundbreaking for the first time, I think, in history of women's football to have teams from all the countries competing now to find our contender for the CAF Champions League. So that's going to really give a big boost to women's football and enable us to see the standard in other countries compared to ours, with the champions of last year's Women's League leading the way in Sundowns, the South African champions.
And of course, coming up, it's a few months away still, but Zambia are heading to the Olympic Games in Tokyo. They've been drawn in a tough group, of course. How do you see that panning out for them?
Well, very tough, yes. I think their first time playing some of these top countries, to be drawn with Brazil, China and Netherlands. A tough draw, but then, of course, at the Olympics, there's no weak group, really. But I think they need to play a few more friendlies to prepare properly for that. They've just played South Africa, where they lost. But I think they should be playing before they go, certainly a friendly against Nigeria, Cameroon, South Africa again, because the only way to prepare for a big tournament like the Olympics is to compete. And that's always been the problem for African teams, is they don't compete enough. So definitely for them, two or three more friendlies is going to be a big help to them, because it's tough Olympics and they're in a tough group.
Now, you, I believe, have a book in the works. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, yes, I've decided about a year ago to start writing my memoirs, my biography. So it's nearly complete. Of course, the big focus being on my life in football over 40, 50 years. How I started, how I developed, and my travels in Africa, specifically Nigeria, many times over. But I've also focused on other aspects of my life. I've been a musician for most of my life and played in a big African jazz band called Basadi Women of Jazz. And luckily, with them and through football, I got to meet Madiba twice. So not many people have that opportunity. And also about my teaching, generally my life growing up. So I hope it will appeal to many people. And it's quite funny in places. So I'm nearly finished with that and hope to have it out sometime this year. So the book is an inspirational book to inspire other women to start on a path in football or music and fight the fight, as I've done, to take women's football to another level.
That's it for another episode of the CASAFA Show, as we head into what will be a crucial period for many of our Southern African sides, with the qualifiers for the 2022 World Cup about to start in a month's time. We will have a lot more on that in our next episode.
Don't forget, you can listen to more of our podcasts on Sokoloduma Radio, CASAFA.tv, Spotify and iTunes. And you can also get the latest news via our website at www.casafa.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok.